Hi, I'm Karen Webster, and welcome to Topic TBD, our weekly look at the topics that are both interesting and newsworthy. Today, our topic is EMV, three little letters that are both interesting, newsworthy, and even controversial. Here to help us make the conversation very lively is Jeremy Gumbly, the CTO of CreditCall. Jeremy, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks very much for having me. Always a pleasure, Karen.
Always nice to catch up with you. And you certainly have a massive understanding of this topic, EMV, are very close to it, and have experienced it around the world in its various deployments. So you're the perfect person today to provide a little perspective on where we are here in the U.S. As you know, there's been a lot written about EMV, its status, its issues, its successes. And so rather than start with my perspective on things, I want to get your perspective on things. Where are we? How would you characterize the state of EMV in the U.S. as we approach the one-year date of the liability shift?
So I can characterize it in a number of different ways. I mean, it's certainly a worthy topic of debate, and you either love it or hate it, but whether we hate it or love it, we still have to deal with it. So as far as I can see, in our interest in EMV in the U.S., and when we can see an exponential growth of EMV transactions, going through our payment gateway, I think it's a mixed experience for consumers, however. Now, I think that everybody can identify, on this can identify with the little piece of paper that is typically dunked into the chip slot that says, no chips, please, which shows that although they have an EMV-capable PIN pad or reader, it's not actually deployed in an EMV mode. And I think that between that and some pretty shocking consumer experiences with EMV, I mean, I use my US EMV cards regularly in the US, and I'm seeing transaction times of anything from seconds right the way through to multiple 30-second increments. So that's disconcerting. So I think that there are a lot of EMV transactions. If you take a look at MasterCard's data, you take a look at Visa's data, then transaction volume is increasing. But there are some pretty unique characteristics about the U.S. market that have, created a lot of issues for the EMV deployment. So PIN debit is always a source of, or has historically been a source of problems, both from a certification point of view and from running it in production, so running those transactions through the various networks in an EMV-capable mode. That's created a number of issues as well. One that we predicted some time ago in the U.S. Has actually come to pass, and that is the certification bottleneck. Now, I remember talking about this back in 2012, and people thought I was crazy that everybody by the time EMV would arrive would have figured out how to do certifications in a very efficient, timely manner, and that has not, unfortunately, come to pass. So a number of things are holding or have held up EMV in the U.S. market. So I think we can do a lot better, but I don't think it's been a complete disaster. As I say, we are seeing a lot of chip card adoption in the U.S., and actually, I take my hat off to the U.S. issuers for issuing quite so many EMV cards as well. So I think that from an issuance point of view, the issuers in the States have done a fantastic job of putting chip-enabled plastic in consumers' hands.
No, I think that's right. We've done some calculations, and there are probably 700 million cards circulating in the U.S. So to your point, that part has been checked off. And I do agree with your earlier point. Sales of masking tape have skyrocketed because that's the other thing that goes over those slots is a piece of masking tape that says no chip. But why are merchants doing that, given that there are so many cards? So therefore, the liability shift isn't just a concept. It's actually real to them. Why aren't they doing anything about it?
I think that it's in the merchant's interest, realistically, to enable chip transactions within their infrastructure, not least for the chargebacks that are occurring. I mean, we've had reports from merchants that are experiencing six-digit dollar amounts of chargebacks every month. So you would have thought it's in every merchant's interest to migrate across. But I feel the problem is that, you know, as always in migrations, the tier ones are fairly well serviced because they can afford the expertise, to hire the expertise in, to headhunt the expertise in order to migrate their systems across. And typically the big players, the big tier ones, are already using the kind of infrastructure that is used internationally as well. So they have an easier job of it. But, you know, even that said, there are some of them that are struggling with it, especially transaction times. I think one of the fundamental issues is availability of EMV-enabled solutions that fit a broad category of merchants. So, I mean, that's what I would say is actually happening, is that the upgrades just aren't available, or there are circumstances in which the merchants cannot yet deploy. Now, we know that in retail, you can forget about changing anything POS infrastructure-wise, you know, in the run-up to the holidays, you know, whether that be Thanksgiving, whether that be, you know, the Christmas period as well, then you can forget about that, and because they're going to be in change freeze. And what retailer is going to roll out, you know, some unknown transaction technology, as far as they're concerned, unknown, into an environment when they're going into their busiest sales period? I mean, those are some of the unique challenges that we face in the U.S. in that, you know, you've got Thanksgiving and then you've got the Christmas period, then the sale, the post-Christmas sales period as well, which pushes you into sort of late January, early February. So there's a whole chunk of time in the calendar year that you can't change anything anyway, and you'd be crazy to change something that significant just before there anyway. So I think the U.S. has some pretty unique characteristics that have held up the deployment of EMV. A
couple things to respond to that. So, of course, the networks have provided, you know, the quick chip and their various branding monikers for the expedited EMV process to deal with the transaction time. Why isn't that helping?
Well, I think that it's a very noble effort on behalf of the networks and the brands. I think that deploying that out, I mean, there's merchants out there that haven't deployed just the regular strain of EMV without going, you know, down the quick chip route. So I think that in order to implement that, there is a truncated variant of certification, level 3 certification testing that needs to be undertaken. And as far as, you know, we're concerned, I mean, there is some interest in quick chip from merchants that we're certainly speaking to, but it isn't as strong as I thought it might be, which indicates the problem is potentially not transaction times for some merchants, but how and when they can adopt EMV as a standard anyway. And I think that with most mid-sized merchants, most mid-sized retailers, there's a lot of moving parts in their POS system. So I think experimenting with it is a little bit of a step into the abyss almost in changing something quite so fundamental. I think that once they've deployed EMV, they'll have a better idea of how that affects their queuing dynamics at their checkouts, and then whether they need to make that leap towards quick chip or not is a different matter. Now, in a typical EMV implementation, I mean, certainly in Europe and elsewhere in the world, Asia Pac as well, I mean, you're seeing, or we see, typical EMV transaction times of between 2 and 4 seconds. So.
Yeah.
There's lots of factors as to why that is not being achieved in the U.S. at the moment. Now, a lot of the deployments that we do as Credit Call of, you're typically seeing those transaction times, you know, the lower transaction times. So I think that with certain retailers, they have a real mishmash of different equipment and solutions at the back end that all conspire to reduce transaction time. So I think there's a few things that need to be sorted out on that one. QuickChip is certainly a great way of removing some of the timing burden, and also a good idea from a certification standpoint, because it is a truncated, reduced set of certifications for that.
Mm-hmm. An observation, just listening to you talk about the bottlenecks, is it fair to say that the big guys with their resources and, you know, perhaps using this, as someone I've spoken with recently suggested, as an opportunity to lift up the hood and not just move to EMD, but to tinker with some of the other point of sale related integrations and basically tune up the car, and that has taken them, you know, 10 months to do, but you know, they're kind of checking off those boxes and they're ready for the holiday season and have optimized the process. So the large guys are good, but then the small guys that don't have a complicated system and are maybe looking at Square, you know, Square Register, mm-hmm. which has a very slick solution. Mm-hmm. There's a pretty hip coffee shop in our building that has that set up, and it's very slick. But it's the middle guys that are struggling. Is that kind of how you see it?
I think that there's potentially a lot of solutions for the mom and pop stores out there. I mean, a number of our partners, you know, provide those kinds of solutions. So I think that, you know, the single checkout, single lane, small retail store, I think they've got numerous different solutions to choose from. Not least getting a standalone device from their bank. Mm-hmm. where they can do transactions. So I think those guys are pretty well provided for. It's when you go up a little bit, when you start getting into more sophisticated, I mean, we're not talking tier one here. We're talking people that have an integrated point of sale across a number of different retail locations. That's where the options start to become fewer, in my opinion, because of the complexity of their back end as well. But to your point about making or taking the EMV opportunity to tune up POS systems, I mean, what we've actually seen is that with the introduction of EMV, not only do you get the benefits of EMV, you get with the choice of PIN pad, you get contactless, which is then opening up avenues for Apple Pay and Android Pay, which certainly in the EU have been incredibly successful, in the UK in particular. And normally, when I have an opportunity to use that, I do. So we're seeing a number of advantages to moving to EMV. It's not just EMV in itself, but all of the other things. And the opportunity to review POS systems. I mean, another interesting thing, we've seen a major retailer that has introduced their own closed-loop Starbucks-esque payment scheme into the mix as well. Now, was that a response to criticism over EMV? I think only that retailer can, you know, can specifically say. But I mean, it's certainly given them an opportunity to bring more of the payment infrastructure in house and have more control over that. It's certainly an interesting departure.
So it brings to mind an experience I've had recently where this is a national chain, a quick service chain, that just implemented a brand new point of sale system, customer-facing terminals that is now integrated with how you actually place orders, and mm-hmm. they're going to introduce a mobile order ahead app and so forth. But they also have the masking tape across the slot for the chip. Mm-hmm. But they advertise that they're very happy to take you know, Apple Pay, Android Pay. They're very much advocating the use of mobile payments. Do you think that the masking tape will stay over that slot in an effort to try to move consumers to contactless, mobile contactless?
Well, I think there's probably a number of advantages to doing that, but whether retailers will remove a payment option from consumers is remains to be seen. Now, typically, retailers want as many payment avenues as possible. I think the masking tape issue that you're talking about, I mean, is a temporary thing, and I think a lot of that has to do with user education as well, in which devices can you use chip cards in and which can't you? And I suppose that the masking tape is on there because although there's a chip card slot, it's not enabled or you can't do an EMV transaction. And because we're seeing places that have the chip cards enabled and places that don't, there is confusion on top of confusion because how do you go about using a chip card? And then how do you understand which retailers actually have that enabled or not? And I've seen in certain retailers, I mean, I travel extensively in the U.S., certain retailers in certain states, they've got chip enabled, and then in other states, they don't. So it's kind of a fragmented picture for the consumer in terms of what they can use and where they can actually use it as well. So, I mean, that might just be because I travel extensively and I notice these things, but, I mean, it can't be helping the cause of EMV in the U.S. So, I mean, that's what I would have to say on it. It's a confusing picture at the moment as to what you can and can't use and where.
I agree, and I think, you know, it was one thing when you got a chip card and you were looking at the same terminal because there hadn't been an upgrade and you kind of understood that you have a new car that you couldn't quite use the way it was intended because the upgrade hasn't happened. The confusion is now there's an obviously new thing sitting there that has the capability of enabling the card that you now possess and you're not able to use it. And it does create confusion. And I wonder if at some point, you know, maybe even a little frustration and backlash because, of course, consumers are being told that this is a safer way to transact. Mm. And so the question is, why is my merchant not giving me that opportunity now?
Mm. Well, I mean, as I say, it's a confusing picture. I think that it will rationalize after a period of time as well. I mean, we're seeing, you know, quite a large-scale adoption and migration to EMV technology in our day-to-day business, which, as I said earlier on, I mean, our transaction volume under EMV is growing exponentially in the U.S., which is a fantastic sign. But I think there is, in terms of a scorecard, there is some way to. There's room for improvement. That's what we would say back in the U.K., room for improvement.
Yeah. No, I've noticed, you know, even large – a lot of the large retailers that I shop that do accept EMV transactions, they have done things to make the transaction, the perception of the transaction seem faster because they've tuned their own systems, I suppose. Mm. But, you know, I think everyone recognizes the challenge with the different way of behaving and the different behaviors consumers need to adopt to use the cards, but they're here, so we need to kind of get with the program.
Mm.
What do you tell small merchants in, for example, the restaurant segment that is really contemplating very seriously whether or not to actually accept EMV as a method of payment when they've got mobile options that they're thinking deeply about? How do you talk to those merchants?
And we've seen some very interesting developments. They said that necessity is the mother of all inventions, and I think that the way that restaurants, in particular tipping, works in the U.S. has certainly created some inventions. We've seen some really interesting innovation in tableside or at table payments. Now there's many mobile schemes and closed user schemes, but you know, we've seen some interesting technology in terms of tabletop devices where you can pay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Devices that kind of emulate the restaurant experience. So, you know, the folder, the portfolio they leave at the end of your meal to pay when you've got time. We're seeing some innovation around that where devices that look, you know, almost exactly like that are being left on the table where you can review your bill and pay it as well. I think that there's many solutions for restaurants and EMV going forward. What do we recommend? Now, I mean, we provide a lot of technology and solutions into the restaurant space. And we can emulate the nominal tipping table side methodology of paying, just as it used to be as well. So it's down to, you know, what that particular restaurant, that merchant wants, whether they want the EMV experience or whether they want additional functionalities such as Android Pay as well. And there's many different schemes around that currently. I think that Yelp also kind of got involved in that paying table side. So I think that we're going to see a lot of different options available to merchants and obviously consumers. And as with the technology, the amount that it gets used defines categorically whether it's survived or not. And we've seen a lot of various offline payment schemes where you've got a wallet of subscription in the cloud, being debited amounts of money, and they come and go depending on, you know, how much staff money they've raised or not managed to raise. But I think that cards in their physical form are easy or contactless are going to be here for quite some time to come. I mean, the issue was, as I mentioned, 100 million cards. That's a lot of spend that they've gone to. I don't think that the issue cycles the way they are. I don't think that's going to be going away anytime soon.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. In the normal of this conversation, I think we'll be talking about EMV for many years to come, and I'm sure the conversation will be just as interesting and perhaps even as controversial. Jeremy, thanks very much today for providing your perspective. We could go on for a long time, but we need to cut our time together today short, so we will say goodbye, and thank you again for joining.
Thanks very much, Karen.
And thanks to everyone who joined us today. Have a great rest of the day and a good weekend. Thanks again, Jeremy.
Thank you.